Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Welcome to They Call This a Movie, testing the strength of friendships one terrible movie at a time. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and other podcast services by searching They Call This a Movie. We're part of the Main Damie Network, and to find more from us, check out the website at themaindamie.com or on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at themaindamie. We're also now a proud member of Geek Vibes Nation, and you can find them at gvnation.com. Welcome to They Call This a Movie. This is Anthony Delvecchio, and with me, as always, is Dan Aquino and Mark Meyer. Say hello, gentlemen.
We are inevitable.
Yeah. You guys can keep talking. I just got to finish ordering my tickets for the Sonic the Hedgehog movie.
That's a future they called this a movie, if I've ever seen one.
Yes. How are you guys doing tonight? Good?
Good. Very good. Excited for this episode.
Yes, it is a very special episode. Usually we'd be sitting here getting ready to talk about a movie that we, all three of us, would probably hate in one degree or another. But no, this week is different.
We're breaking down the Sonic the Hedgehog trailer frame by frame for an entire hour.
Yes.
This is going to get wild with the Sonic the Hedgehog thing, because it's going to go past today.
That's a Patreon exclusive. So in due time. No, this is a special episode because even though we decided to do the 1983 movie Endgame last week to cover us for Avengers Endgame, we decided, you know what? We're just going to talk about Avengers Endgame this week. Kind of the opening movies this week are a little weak. We could have done Garbage Pail Kids the movie for Ugly Dolls, but... I already wrote an article about that last year. Maybe I'll put that link that in the bio. So if anybody's looking for some bad movie reviews, we can supplement your needs there. But no, we're going to talk Avengers Endgame because we all saw it over the weekend, some of us more than once. And we figured throw our hats in the ring to discuss it. We will not be talking about Game of Thrones this week. It's just Avengers Endgame. So, guys... Going into this movie, this event, shall we say, as it's broken near every single box office record that it could in a span of 5 days, what was your expectations going in? What did you think of Infinity War? What have you thought of the MCU up until this point?
It's weird because I had a feeling you were going to lead off with that because you usually do. How could you answer that question? Like, what were your expectations and what were your thoughts going in? Just like, you've been with it since 2008. So could expectations get any higher, really? I think that's the real question. I mean, this might have been the most hyped movie in our lifetime by far. So to say expectations were high is a little much, or not much, is an undersell, I would say. But yeah, I was very much looking forward to it. And obviously, I've seen every single movie. I've seen all the Marvel movies prior to the MCU. So this was, you know, this was my, well, I said this was my moon landing, pretty much.
Mark?
Yeah, so, yeah, I was excited. The fact that I agreed to see it at 11 o'clock showing the day before having work the next morning was...
Mark, get over it. We do a 24-hour streaming marathon for you once a year. Get over it.
I was making a point that if I wasn't excited about this movie, I wouldn't have seen it that late in the evening. God. Going out there. That
there's
was my
a, there's
point.
A cross right next to Jesus for you and your sacrifice, Mark.
All right, so back to the Sonic the Hedgehog trailer. So,
oh, God. I was going to ask, are you going to do that for that movie, Mark? Are you going to... And we're going to the midnight showing, right?
Oh, no, I'm probably seeing that by myself. I already know that.
And we'll go. I know Ant's going to go to that with you.
Probably not. As I mentioned, I'm not a Sonic guy.
Yeah. So,
but anyway.
Anyway, Mark. Back to my point. So, yeah, I was really excited to see it just because I really loved the last bunch of movies that have come out in terms of, you know, Infinity War and Black Panther and Captain Marvel, Spider-Man. You know, it was a nice run going up here, and it was just getting me more and more excited. I was probably the most excited for any movie in a long time for this one here. So probably for Marvel, the most excited I've been since maybe Winter Soldier, just when I heard the premise of that movie, since I do lean a little bit into more of the spy territory in terms of movies I've liked historically. So, yeah, getting into that theater, just the anticipation of watching it with a large crowd like that instead of, you know, either at home or in a smaller theater was exciting. I don't know, you guys probably, I don't know if Dan saw a difference in the two showings he saw in terms of energy or if it was the same, but I hadn't felt anything like that in a theater since going to a movie theater to watch being a Philadelphian, then watch when they did Rocky Balboa in the theater, and just that anticipation of everybody in that theater was invested in that movie. It was a pretty cool feeling. A lot of the cheers, some unexpected for certain things, some things that you can tell they wanted a cheer for didn't really get as much of a reaction. And I've heard talking to other people that it was different spots in different parts of the movie were cheered louder than others, depending on the crowd you had. So it was interesting that it wasn't one of those movies that these were the six spots that they wanted to land to get cheers. It was at least a dozen or more I've heard from people I've talked to. So not being a big time, you know, Star Wars guy, I've never had a movie anticipating going in and, you know, being that invested. I don't know if that answers the question the way you want.
Mark always takes the opportunity to bet.
Hate Star Wars. We all know that.
Well, wait. Weren't you excited for Fast 8? Wasn't that your, like, your
well,
holy grail or whatever? I'm just saying, now, if we're going to compare.
Yeah, in terms of movies that I like in genres, I was excited for Fast 7 more than anything. Or, you know, Furious 7 or whatever, because they change the naming titles on those all the time. But yeah, those movies I get ridiculously excited for because I know I'm just going to have fun for 2.5 hours. You know, this isn't like a, you know, they try and string together a story through the whole movies there. But it's not like this where it's 10 years, 22 movies, question mark. And just this, and they found a way to make 3 hours seem like it just blew by, you know, which was a pretty big feat. I mean, we watch movies all the time that range anywhere from 1.5 to 2 hours. And, you know, sometimes those are a struggle.
Yeah.
But this is amazing. I saw a great joke that, you know, doing the comparison with DC and Marvel of people yelling at Zack Snyder about having a 3-hour cut of Justice League and Warner Brothers wanting him to cut it. And, you know, Disney is basically like to Marvel, There's nothing else you can add. You've gotten everything.
Right. They have open range. It's pretty cool. Yeah. I'm glad that you brought up the character, or not the character, the audience energy, because when Jen and I went on opening night Thursday, the crowd was like totally into it. They were cheering over every little thing. And normally it's annoying, but for this movie, I feel like it helped make it a little better. Because Mark was saying that sometimes where they wanted you to cheer, maybe they didn't. In our theater, they definitely cheered for all the minor details and everything. And the second time we saw it, it was a little bit more subdued. We went a little earlier. We went to a 10 o'clock showing, and there were some kids there, but nothing. No one went crazy. There was a couple laughs, you know, there was laughs and whatnot, but no cheering. So it was a different viewing on the second time around. I was able to really listen to all the characters and what they were saying, and I actually wound up getting a little bit more emotional the second time around. It was the first time I felt like there was just so much going on. You're paying attention to so much. Mm-hmm. It's a lot to take in, but I'm glad I saw it twice.
Gotcha. Yeah. I guess I was pretty excited for this. I've kind of gone up and down when it comes to Marvel. I've never really truly disliked one as much as I rag on Age of Ultron.
What did you call it?
Age of Sucktron.
Sucktron.
I don't think that's particularly good installment of the MCU, and the Thor movies are really, more than anything, I just don't really remember them.
The first two were terrible.
Yeah, and I think they've started to hit consistency in the past phase or so. There's plenty in the first couple of phases that I actually didn't see in theaters, and I think besides Thor Ragnarok, which just never wound up happening in terms of, you know, it was your wedding that weekend, and then, I never got around to see it after that. I think I've seen just about all of them in theaters. So I guess I'm getting more and more of a Marvel fanboy. But as you guys said, you know, this was an easy 3 hours. I could have watched a 4-hour cut of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
It met and exceeded all expectations after as good of it as Infinity War was, as well as they were able to do that, and the anticipation that movie created, it delivered completely. I think this is just going to be a love fest podcast episode, which, you know what, we deserve it after some of the movies we've watched recently.
Yeah, we get to kick back and relax on this one, and really just, especially after Left Behind.
Ooh, yeah, I think that one's got ripple effects for our sanity.
Yeah, absolutely, and this is a well-deserved vacation.
Yeah, I think this felt like to me a perfect series finale of a TV show. I think it's like the series finale of Parks and Recreation was like perfectly crafted, where it gave each of the characters the ending that they deserved, and it kind of gave fan service to the fans. You know, they kind of figured what the fans would want to see in a series finale of Parks and Rec, and they kind of delivered on all those points. They made each character have their own kind of ending, and this is kind of what that felt like, especially knowing, you know, until they back up the Brinks truck for Robert Downey Jr. and Chris Hemsworth and Chris Evans, maybe make some guest appearances down the road. These are more or less their swan song. So, you know, they each had different endings, and Chris Hemsworth, maybe not an ending.
Right. He leaves it kind of open.
Maybe he's going to show up in Guardians of the Galaxy 3, which I would be.
Excuse me. You mean as Guardians of the Galaxy?
Right.
I loved your tweet. What gives Chris Hemsworth the right to be that good looking and have that kind of comedic timing?
Yeah. It's so funny because I'm not a big fan of any of the Thor movies. I thought Thor Ragnarok, obviously the best of the three, I thought it was fine. Like a 7. I maybe have to watch it again. I would say. But he steals just every scene he's in these Avengers movies. He really does. And more since the set is like after the first one. I think the first one he's a little more subdued. That was Joss Whedon still kind of touch, and I think the Russo brothers and James Gunn and Taika Waititi is kind of all three of those kind of come together to create a more comedic MCU since Joss Whedon has kind of given the reins over. And they've changed Thor for the better. And he's just so good. I mean, he's badass when he needs to be, but he's hilarious when he needs to be.
It's cool because in this movie he touches on all three. He goes from being, he's suffering from PTSD to, you know, having that emotional scene when he goes back to Asgard, and then at the end he gets serious and he's ready to kick ass. So there's such a wide spectrum that Hemsworth, but I haven't seen it in any other movie yet with him, because it's either he's all serious or all comedic. So this he's taken Thor to, he's really made him a really enjoyable character to watch.
Yeah.
Very complex.
Yeah, and I think that comes with the fact of being comfortable with the character after so many years. I'm sure, not that it shows any promise to, but I'm sure if he plays that character that he's going to be in Men in Black for a few movies, by the second or third movie, he'll get into the same flow, you know, of finding it.
It's probably better that they have Tessa Thompson with him as well, who he has chemistry with.
Yeah, she's an amazing actress anyway. But it's just the point with if watching movie series, as we all have, you can tell the actors that sort of find the character and aren't just trusting what the script has in front of them. Like, I think in these movies, the three that definitely found it, I'll say four, but he's the original. But outside of Robert Downey Jr., who just became Tony Stark, I can't think of Tony Stark any other way than how he played him. But, you know, Paul Rudd found this level with Ant-Man that is amazing, and just makes him, from what I've heard, better than some of the representations in the comics and things like that.
Scott Lang is a third tier character.
Yeah.
No one knew about him going into that movie.
Yeah. And he just found that space with it that only really Paul Rudd can with what they asked of him.
Sure. And just to break in right real quick before you get onto your next point. Paul Rudd is the star of the first third of this movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
His performance between, like, in the beginning when he comes back to where, you know, Tony Stark shows up at Avengers headquarters once he breaks the time travel paradox or whatever.
Yeah.
He puts out some great moments in those scenes.
He was so underrated in this movie, I felt. And he wasn't getting enough talk. But he kind of carries the first act of the film almost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and
again, ranging from comedic to emotional.
Yep.
And in that same time frame of the movie, the second person is Mark Ruffalo finding the Hulk banner. You know, whole, you know, and he plays him and Rudd play off each other during that first third of the movie until you get to, you know, Thor completely taking over the movie for the rest of the two thirds of it. But I think my favorite scene, and I would think it definitely had to be improv on their part, was the taking the selfie scene in the restaurant.
That was a good one.
Yeah. Sorry. But that you can't write that in a script the way he was like, I'm Ant-Man. Do you want a photo?
And the kids just went along with it.
I just love how it ends. With like, take the goddamn phone.
I think it's safe to say everyone gives the performance of, you know, of the MCU. Like, it was bar none the best out of everybody. You know, Scarlett Johansson kills it as Black Widow this time, where she took it just as hard losing, and you see that she's trying to keep it together somehow, and she's barely hanging on. Again, Paul Rudd, Chris Evans, again, I can't imagine anyone as Captain America now, and obviously we're going to have to, but he was phenomenal. Robert Downey Jr. does what he does. Just everyone gives, the original six give the performance, not of a lot, I don't want to say of a lifetime, but definitely the best performances in the MCU.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of, that first act is kind of, it's so interesting because it's like, this is the first time where we've seen them lose, and they wait 5 years before they put a plan into it. So they deal with the fact that they fell short for 5 years. That's like, that's big. Yeah. You know, there's no other movie that I could think of in terms of like any superhero movies where that's a definitive loss, you know? So, you know, there's times where a good guy will fail, and then, you know, in the span of the movie, it's, you know, days or maybe a week or so, and then they come back and they win. You know, maybe the space between Dark Knight and The Dark Knight Rises.
That's what I was going to say. I think it's 8 years, but he doesn't lose.
Yeah, he doesn't lose.
He gives himself up pretty much.
Sure.
He just quits. But yeah, I love how it affects each and every member differently. You know, Cap is, he's doing what Cap would do. He's trying to, he's fighting the good fight still, you know, helping others, because that's what he always does. Tony is terrified, so he hides away. Same thing with Thor. He bears that immense weight of failure because he had the kill shot and he failed. And I already touched on Black Widow. Obviously, Hawkeye doesn't know what happened, but he just lost his family, so he goes rogue. Mm-hmm. It's interesting to see that, you're right, because we've never dealt with heroes who have been through what they've been through.
Right.
Yeah, and in the same sense, you can see a lot of foreshadowing later in the movie, just how they decided to deal with you know, their issues here with Black Widow. The only thing she knows is, you know, running this organization. Yeah. Like, she can't do it. She's still doing missions. She's sending them out, which leads to a great Captain Marvel rocket scene in the holograms there. And then, you know, you have the first, you know, contact about Hawkeye between her and War Machine there. And it's just, and you see, you know, you mentioned he's a grief counselor, you know, Captain America, or he's just taking over that grief session thing. I couldn't really tell what that was. But, and then the whole movie, you know, after they show everything, sort of starts turning at that point as soon as Scott comes in.
Right.
You know, and then, you know, it's sort of like some of them are sort of like, no, I'd rather still do this, especially like Hulk. It's sort of like, you know, I finally found
like peace.
You know, it's, you know, it sucks, but I'm fine.
Right. Some people have moved on. Like Hulk has moved on. Tony has moved on. He's got a family of his own now. It's pretty cool because you, in the comic books, obviously, you've seen them lose and everything. But how do you put that from comics, from the pages to the movie, and make it interesting? I think they were able to do that pretty, like, because they bring everyone down to a human level, and these you know, these guys, some of them are gods, you know. And it's the one thing that I was kind of not annoyed by, but it was just, it seemed there was two scenes in the first act where Captain Marvel just finds Tony and Nebula drifting in space. It would have been cool to see, maybe even if they sent a distress signal and they pick up on it back home and she's able to find them, and the rat bringing Scott back. It's kind of like a Deus Ex Machina.
Yeah.
But
the rat was the real hero.
The MVP, right? I've seen plenty of memes about that. It would have been cool to, I mean, how else are you going to bring him back? Who knows? And that kind of leads into the whole time travel. And I don't know how you guys feel about it, but I'm glad that they really poke fun at pop culture time travel, like Back to the Future.
I'm 100% sure that Don Cheadle, Paul Rudd scene was just the Russo brothers going, all right, just start naming time travel movies.
Just name movies.
Yeah, just name time travel movies. And then Paul Rudd with the hammer on the end of the improv scene goes, Die Hard. Wait, no, that's not one. Yeah.
it was very similar to the 40-Year-Old Virgin with him and Seth Rogen just going, like, you know how I know you're... So, it's pretty... Who would have thought that Paul Rudd would be able to be like do this? It's because he's usually strictly just comedy, but now they thrust him into this role and he plays such a huge key role in it that I'm looking forward to the next Ant-Man movie.
It's a theory that I've always set out there and I 100% buy into is that it's a lot easier for a really good comedic actor to be good at drama than it is vice versa.
I can see that because
a lot of the, and it's an old story I remember from Stephen Colbert, used to say that a lot of really good comedians come from a place of tragedy. So if they have to go that route, they have something to draw on. Like, it's not like a dramatic actor who's never told a joke in his life trying to, you know, get set up punchline and get it correct, you know, which is what astounds me about Chris Hemsworth, is that all of his body of work before, you know, most of this Avengers stuff had very little to do with comedy.
Yeah.
But it's just this, the whole thing with, you know, the time travel thing, because I guess we can get into that deeper later. But they make that joke and that little section there is very important because most of the time when you introduce time travel in any kind of movie or situation, it just gets messy. And that's no exception here. There's parts that are pretty messy because of time travel and certain things that are left dangling because of it. But they try their best to tie it all up and stick to rules. So having the idea where they try to base it in science as much as they can and sort of they call out some of those movies specifically because things happen that happen in those movies, like the whole mentioning Time Cop. You know, foreshadows the two captains fighting.
Right.
Because, you know, in Time Cop, you can't, two same matter can't share
same occupy space. The same space. We've gone through that.
Yeah. And then, you know, Back to the Future.
They must have listened to our podcast.
Yep.
You know, and Back to the Future is all about changing the future by changing the past.
Right.
And it's just, you know, it was their way of saying, yeah, we know time travel kind of sucks, but, you know, and it was also a nod, and I guess we can touch on this later, but it allows them to go some places after this by introducing time travel into the universe.
Things are left open, I feel.
Yeah.
So I feel like we're not really, for this podcast, we're not kind of going through the plot, right? We're just kind of, we're free-forming here.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you know, they form their plan to get the stones. They time travel. The group that goes to 2012, they mess up with the Tesseract, right?
Yeah.
Loki takes it. So, to me, you know, the Ancient One tells Bruce that if a stone is taken, an alternate branch kind of forms.
Yeah.
So now, is that what you're talking about, Mark? They leave open that a new branch is formed because Loki has taken the Tesseract from 2012?
Well, yeah, you have parts of that. It's also the line Tony has later in the movie, which I guess I'll just touch on it because I've heard this from other people. I don't haven't really read comics too much or get too deep into the Avengers story outside of Marvel Cinematic Universe. But, you know, he says that, you know, something to the effect that I'm going to paraphrase because I don't have the line in front of me. You know, we fought time, but time sometimes fight back.
When you mess with time.
Sometimes time fights back.
Usually fights back or something. Yeah.
Like that. And from what I heard from people that are really deep into reading comics and know some of the villains of the Avengers, it opens the door for Kang, you know, is the arbiter of time or something, I heard from somebody. You know, he's just worried always about time being correct.
Mm-hmm.
So just having this story deal with time travel, and we know from watching these movies that they never do anything by accident. Everything has a point to it. And this movie shows you that throughout the other 22 movies, everything mattered. Like, every single little thing, you know, came up. Even big parts of this were about Thor the Dark World, for crying out loud.
True.
You know,
that's considered one of the worst.
Yeah. So, you know, it just opens the door, and also it connects to, and again, I'm regurgitating this from other people, but it also connects into the end of Guardians 2 when they introduce Adam Warlock, mm-hmm. who is connected to Kang. So, you know, it's all the time travel, while, you know, very good if you're just focused on this, oh yeah, of course, that's how I have to do it, you know, blah, blah, blah. But it also leads them into phase 4 and 5 or whatever to have a big villain. That's not just a, you know, not just a Loki or some type like that. That's not a big galaxy villain.
Well, they are. I think they are kind of going more galaxy based.
Yeah.
I mean, you have Captain Marvel. They're doing the Eternals next.
Yeah.
You have Guardians 3. Yeah. So you do have some stuff coming up, and a lot of speculation is. I have heard Kang.
Yeah.
And I've also heard, you know, Galactus. Yeah. Some of the Celestials.
Yeah.
But, I mean, obviously that's for another, not even for another podcast, probably. But
yeah, it's like
you kind of keep getting bigger and bigger.
Right. And which kind of brings me, I felt a little sadness leaving this movie. And obviously there's a lot of emotional parts, but all 22 movies or 21 movies are building to this epic crescendo. And you get Endgame, and it ties, like you guys were saying, it ties everything perfectly. Everyone has their story arc completed of the original Avengers. So now I left the theater just kind of, and Jen was the same way. It's like, well, how do you top that? How can you replace Evans and Hemsworth and Downey and expect, I mean, you have set up other characters, you know, you have Bozeman is a great Black Panther. I don't know how many movies Holland has as Spider-Man, but everyone loves him. Cumberbatch is Strange. You have certain characters, but would you compare them to the original three, the big three?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to think back of what we of how we felt about them before now. You know. Mm-hmm. It's hard to think back to 2008, like, you know, when in 2006 when they announced, oh, Robert Downey Jr. is Iron Man. We were probably like, first of all, the fuck has Robert Downey Jr. done in the past 10 years? Second of all, who the fuck cares about Iron Man?
Yeah.
I was a little indifferent to the whole thing because we're fresh off the heels of X-Men movies and Spider-Man movies. So we're like, all right, well, now I guess they're just going to throw anyone at the wall and see who sticks.
Sure.
But
I mean, it's always the hindsight is so funny because, like, you know, the classic example, Heath Ledger. It's like everybody, right. When he was hired, of like, oh, really? I don't see him as the Joker. He's not going to be able to do any better than Jack Nicholson. Jack Nicholson's never going to get topped.
And yet, I was
together
that people.
Performance and arguably the best villain of all time. So, yeah, I mean, it's hard to envision a Captain America movie starring Falcon right now.
Right. But I think they set Anthony Mackie up in a good spot.
Sure.
You know, they didn't just introduce him in the past couple movies. Like, he's been around for quite a while.
Yeah.
So chronologically, I believe in the comic books, it does go Rogers, Wilson, then Bucky.
Mm-hmm.
So, because some people are asking, well, I thought Bucky becomes Captain America. I'm like, well, eventually he does, but I think Falcon takes over first.
Yeah.
But either way, I'm glad that they did it. That there was a lot of passing of the torches here.
Yep.
You know, you got Hemsworth or Thor giving up the mantle to Valkyrie. So if they make another Thor movie, we might see her as Thor. And then obviously Captain America, you'll see Sam Wilson as Cap. But do you think they'll get their own solo movies, or will they have to appear in another ensemble movie first?
It's a good question. Maybe we could do some combos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know? I was thinking the same thing.
Maybe not. Maybe it's not just a Sam Wilson as Captain America. Maybe it's a Sam and Bucky.
Well, they're getting their own Plus show, right? Disney Plus.
Are they?
Yeah,
I believe they are.
I didn't realize that. Yeah,
I think so, it's Falcon and Winter Soldier. I think that's what it's called.
Yeah, I know WandaVision is a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, Loki's getting his other, his thing.
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing about Loki is that just some prequel or something like that? Or is that the branch from him taking the Tesseract?
It'll be interesting to see. Yeah.
It's so cool because you have that span between Civil War and Infinity War. That's a few years, I believe. So it's, I wonder if they'll go that route. Because to me, I thought they were going to do it, but I was kind of hoping they didn't bring back the dusted characters. Mm-hmm. Or if they did, it was just temporary. Like we can harness the stones, but we can only do it for a short amount of time. So we have to bring back these people to defeat Thanos once and for all. And then they disappear. And then the movies going forward are within that span of time between Civil War and Infinity War.
Sure. But I think that would kind of hamstring them a little bit.
True. And obviously they do not go that way because they are much smarter than I am. And I trust them fully. But I'm interested to hear your guys' take on what your reaction was and what the theater reaction was at the climactic battle, because there was a lot that happened.
It was nerdgasm after nerdgasm.
And I was definitely part of that.
Yeah
I think it's the loudest cheer is when Cap gets Thor's hammer.
Yeah,
you know,
see that had a pretty good reaction, but not as good as when some people returned.
Sure. Spider-Man was huge.
Yep.
Yeah.
Black Panther was pretty big.
Yep. Yeah.
I think Spider-Man was bigger though.
Yes. In mine it was. So you hear Falcon say on your left, and people got excited. People were clapping, and then Panther comes out with Okoye and Shuri,
yep.
And people went nuts. And then Strange comes out. People got even more nuts, and then Spider-Man hits, and everyone flipped the shit. Yeah. And no one really cared about Bucky and coming out. But
Gwyneth Paltrow got a decent response.
She did pretty well too. Obviously,
which you would have no idea about if you didn't see Iron Man 3.
Right, because she wears the armor.
Like what? How does she? Wait.
Yeah.
The biggest cheer on that section is when they went back to back. Shooting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, that got a loud cheer in our theater. But I think my favorite part that got a loud laugh in that moment is when Spider-Man comes back and then he runs over and rips off the mask and goes, so then woke up and you were gone. And then
Dr. Strange was doing his circle thing.
And then we're here.
Yeah. There was a lot to take in that moment. To me, I loved, Cap wielding Mjolnir, going toe to toe with Thanos, just like in the comic book.
And then bouncing it off the shield.
And there's this one shot, and it's my favorite of the movie. It's when Thanos is pretty much like gloating over him and goes, throughout my whole time of conquest and murder, blah blah blah, it's never been personal, and I'm going to enjoy what I do. And obviously Cap being Cap, he struggles to his feet and just tightens the shield. And you have that one shot, the wide shot, of Thanos' army just against Cap.
Yeah.
And it's like you have the light and the dark on one side. It was such a good shot.
Yeah.
And then everyone comes back and he says the words that pretty much everyone's been waiting since 2012 to hear, Avengers Assemble, and everyone fucking lost it.
Yeah.
It was a good payoff for those who had been waiting all those years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I gotta say, one of the surprises for me in this movie, I know we keep jumping back and forth throughout the movie, but was seeing Tilda Swinton show up. That was
great.
Like, I was like, that's pretty awesome. And then and then when she punched Banner out of Hulk,
it was cool because all of the cameos made weren't gratuitous. They all mattered.
Made sense.
Yes. So it wasn't just like, here's here's Rumlow for no reason, here's Crossbones, here's the Ancient One, here's Michael Douglas. And did you guys notice the original Ant-Man helmet?
Yeah.
It's pretty hard to miss. But I was like, oh, that's the original Ant-Man helmet. seeing all those characters, it made sense. And obviously, it helps wrap up character arcs and everything, obviously with Tony meeting his father and hashing out that his dad really loved him even before he was born. So, and Cap seeing Agent Carter. Yeah. So it was nice. It was cool to see. And I'm having the Ancient One there helped with the whole time travel theory where, well, you could take it, but you have to bring the stone back or else you ruin pretty much everything.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You're being selfish just because it's going to fix your world. Who knows what it's going to do to ours?
Right. So, yeah, in your alternate 2019, you win, but in our 2019, we get crushed. Yeah. So, question for you. Now, this was brought up to me by someone at work. The Ancient One tells Bruce, or when Bruce tells her that, you know, why, like, maybe Doctor Strange made a mistake in giving away the Time Stone, and she goes, or maybe I did. Now, do you think that's in all of those realities, because Strange sees 14 million outcomes, right? Do you think in all of those outcomes except the one, she doesn't give the Time Stone, and that's her mistake?
It's possible. That's interesting.
Yeah, that was my takeaway, that, you know, him telling the story the way he did was her realizing, you know, that because, you know, Steve was the best among us, is what she said. So if he made a decision about something,
right,
maybe I should go against, you know, what I'm thinking right now.
Right, sort of go against my inkling, my natural instincts.
Yeah, yeah. And the, what was I thinking of? The whole thing with, you're talking about with the time travel and going to, like, the greatest hits of Marvel throughout the thing. I love that they played with all the fan theories going in about, you know, why Cap and all them look different.
Yeah.
And, you know, in first scene, you see Cap, he's shaving the beard off. And you're like, well, fuck, there goes that theory.
Right.
And then you see, you know, Black Widow's growing out the red hair again.
Right. Yeah. Everyone's like, pay attention to the hair in the trailers. It gives you some indication of where they are. It's just like, nope, not at all. Yeah, the Russos have been very, even in Infinity War, they were great with hiding things. And they did a very good job with this as well, because they're telling you, oh, you know, everything you see, you know, promotion wise, it's going to be from the first 20 minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you see something that's from the last, like, 45 minutes of the movie. So they're good at keeping people on their toes.
Yeah. When Mark and I saw it, there was a guy behind us that, and I thought we were going to be in for more than what we eventually did. He wound up being fine, but there was an early, it's the scene where Captain Marvel is bringing the ship back to Avengers headquarters when she's rescuing him. And right. there's a shot where they all come out onto the lawn to see what's going on. Right. And Gwyneth Paltrow's in the shot, and he goes, oh, she wasn't in the trailer. I was like, oh
here we go. Like, that wasn't in the trailer.
Yeah, but no, he actually, besides saying awe at, like, the more emotional scenes, he was fine.
We, in our theater, we had a lot of, we had a ton of people who were doing stuff like that. Like, oh, no. Like, oh, okay, now I, you know, oh, that makes sense. So people were kind of talking to them, but again, it really didn't take away from anything. But there was a bunch of, like, teenagers in front of us who, they got pretty emotional as well, and they're freaking out, and, you know, and, can we say dies and everything? So,
yeah,
spoiler cast.
Yeah. So when Tony sacrifices himself, the kids are like, no, you know, it's incredible to see. And obviously you know how attached Jen is to Black Widow.
I thought you were gonna say Captain Marvel.
Yeah, to Captain Marvel. Yeah, you know how much she loves Captain Marvel. She gave me this look, like the puppy dog eyes when Natasha sacrifices herself for the Soul Stone. Like, no, now I'm stuck with Captain Marvel and Wanda.
Well, who would she rather have seen gone over the edge, though?
Like, well, that's what she said. She was like, they really put me in a tough spot, because it was either her first love.
Yeah. Her odd fascination with very average-looking Jeremy Renner.
he was good in this movie, too.
Oh, yeah, he was fine.
Yeah, I had the opposite reaction. I had a clenched fist when she went over instead of Hawkeye.
Well, I read today that the graphic supervisor was the reason that Natasha went over and not Hawkeye, because they had it in the script where either one was going to go, and they were kind of hashing out like who would do it. So the graphic supervisor was like, "You better make her do it." I'm like, "Well, why?" Like, because she has the most to lose. You know, like, this is her, or not the, she had, this is her goal. Like, she's supposed to bring the family back, and she'll do whatever it takes to get the family back.
Yeah.
And he had his family to be with, so she knew that.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Her whole life was, and that's what I was mentioning, foreshadowing earlier, you know, showing that all she did was just try to keep the organization together. So if she had to sacrifice herself to help the organization, you know, she would do it.
Right.
You know, I someone said that the entire Hawkeye character in these movies, it just seems like a joke on Jeremy Renner because he's a dick. That they just made him much more annoying and weak than he is actually in the comics.
I mean, in the comics, he has this ability where it's impossible for him to miss, pretty much. Like, he could hit any target with anything. He's pretty much Bullseye. But, yeah. To me, I thought they, obviously in the first Avengers, he's a pawn. But then in Age of Ultron, he's kind of shown to be he grounds the team, pretty much. I mean, he's not a very important character, per se. I just heard a whoa in the background. But he's constantly showing us that, you know, this is not just gods and super soldiers fighting. This is real people who are putting their lives on the line, and that they're special too. And in Endgame, he and Black Widow pretty much save everybody by going. They draw straws, really, and the two humans, pretty much the two core humans of that squad have to make the ultimate sacrifice.
Yeah, and by the way, why does everybody trust Red Skull so much?
Yeah. Well, they don't know it's Red Skull, which they should if they read history books. Yeah. But now, question for you guys. At the end, when Cap has to go back and return all the stones, wouldn't he run into Red Skull?
Yeah, I guess so.
Right? Or is there no one to give the stone to? Because once the stone is taken, isn't Red Skull's job done? He's the keeper of the stone.
I guess. I don't know. But that was a question. That was like kind of. That is one thing I was thinking of. Like, how do you just return it? Like, all right, we're done with this. Here you go.
And how do you put it into its original conduit? You know, I mean, the time stone's easy. You bring it back to Bleecker Street and just, here you go. But the mind stone was in the scepter. How do you put it back? The space stone was in the tesseract. How do you put that back? The ether was a liquid.
Give it back to Natalie Portman.
Yeah, shove it. What do you like? Make her swallow it? I don't like. What do you do?
I wonder how much she got paid for them using archival footage for the one scene where you could see her face.
Was that archival footage, or was that really? Was she really in it?
I don't think remember. She was. Does she? You could see her face in one shot, and it's her waking up. I'm assuming that's in Thor: Dark World, because other shots you don't see her face. Like it's body double, obviously.
That's a good point. Maybe it wasn't. Yeah, because she was at the premiere, so I figured, oh yeah, maybe they got her in there as well.
I don't know. It really seemed obvious to me that, because I was specific, because that was the one character I was like, oh, I'm surprised. I really didn't think that she'd be back.
You're probably right.
And then I was like, oh, and then there's that one shot, and then I was like, oh well, this shot could have been her face, but it's not her face, so.
And I'll tell you what, that Asgard scene from Thor: Dark World for Endgame, when he's, again, the comedic timing, like, the future has not been kind to you. And what are you talking about? I'm not from the future. Like, come on. I am totally from the future. And he has that, like, mental breakdown. But that was one of the scenes, my second viewing, I got a little emotional. I got a little choked up because, like, how do you say goodbye to your mother knowing that she dies that day? That was he goes back on the day she dies. Yeah. So like, he's seeing, it's like he's putting himself through that heartbreak all over again. because he's seeing her one more time, knowing that he's going to lose her again forever.
Mm-hmm.
So that got me a little emotional, but it was still a good scene because it's important to Thor's character arc, as we see at the end when it's, you know, a lot of people fail at who they think they should be instead of succeeding at the person that they are.
Yeah.
So it's important because he obviously, as a god, he has all this weight on his shoulders, how he's supposed to lead his people and be perfect and, you know, be the mighty Thor. And then now he doesn't have to be that way anymore. He could just be Thor.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. I'm glad we circled back to Thor, because probably the scene I enjoyed the most in the movie is when he's trying to explain about the ether. And he's up there and he's just rambling because it's got to be another one of those moments where I think Robert Downey Jr. made like a choice in the shot to go up to him.
As he's, no, I'm not finished yet.
You know, instead of, it's like it really felt in that scene, that was like one of those things where they gave Hemsworth an outline of here's what we want to hit.
Right.
And the emotion is you're going to be talking about like your ex-girlfriend.
Right.
You know, up there and just go.
Anyway, how do you, yeah, pretty much just like explain, try your best to explain the ether as if you're in a drunken stupor. So he's Infinity War. If you look at the time, Infinity War, he's in it. It's primarily a Thanos movie, but he's in it the second longest.
Yeah.
So they purposely chose to expand on his character arc. This one, it's not so much him, but he still has a huge impact on it. And I'm glad the way that they took his character, because it's just an interesting turn for someone. If you see the comic books, he's always so serious. You know, when you look at his speech bubble, it's like in old-time English. So, like, have at thee, monster, and stuff like that. But at his heart, he's a brutish dummy, you know what I mean? So they nail it.
Yeah, and I also love the fact that apparently Fortnite would still be running even after half the world is gone.
Yeah. That was, I will fly over to your house, crash into your...
This is Thor, god of thunder.
Right.
when they meet up with Valkyrie at New Asgard, and she's like, well, he doesn't really come down much. I was like, oh my god, please make him fat.
I was not expecting that. That was a quite the twist.
Yeah. I was like, oh, please god, make him fat. And sure enough,
The rocket has a pretty good, you look like a melted ice cream cone.
It was a weird fat belly.
It was a beer gut.
Yeah. It was kind of, it did look kind of odd.
And also I mentioned to Ant when they were doing their scene right after, you know, 5 years later, and it zoomed over Citi Field, you know, empty. And I was like, oh, so nothing's changed.
Typical Mets game. I didn't, when I was saying everyone gave great performances, I didn't mention Karen Gillian.
Yeah.
I mean, she pulls off double duty here. You know, she plays Nebula, who's learned that it has grown from what we've seen from Guardians 1 to Infinity War. And she plays pre-Guardians Nebula, who's still trying to earn her father's trust and love. So she does a phenomenal job, too. I mean, she's such a torn character, and she's become really one of the most interesting characters in the MCU, and I hope that they're able to continue that in Guardians 3, or Asgardians, or I don't know what they're going to call it.
But they call it, I hope they do Asgardians of the Galaxy. That'd be amazing.
That would be so cool.
The whole movie is going to be, you know, him searching for Gamora.
Right.
You know, that's the little Easter egg at the end when he's looking at the map. Is that the map searching for her life signature?
Right.
You know.
So do you call it Guardians of the Galaxy, the search for Gamora, like a playoff of the search for Spock?
Yeah, that's the point. And then, then somebody mentioned the Black Widow movie that's supposed to be coming out. Is that you could always make that like sort of a buddy cop movie with her and Gamora finding a way to escape the Soul Stone. Because apparently there's like a world inside the stone.
Yes, that's where, in the comics, everyone he snapped away resides in the Soul Stone.
Yeah. Yeah, so
that would be an interesting choice for like her solo film.
I think it's going to be a prequel.
Yeah.
That's probably, but...
But no, I think...
I'd watch that movie.
Yeah, and because... So they have that part in the end when they bring together the A-Force, so all the female characters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I feel like it would have been more impactful if you had Black Widow there, because she was the OG within the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Mm-hmm. To Mark's credit, I think that would have been cool, because you have the two, probably, I'd say the two most popular, or two of the most popular, because Shuri's up there as well, two of the most popular female characters within this universe banding together, and one is so gullible, and not gullible, but so naive to how Earth works, and then you have Black Widow, who's pretty much just like all business. So it would have been cool to see those two interact. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it'll probably be kind of like that Jennifer Lawrence movie, Red Sparrow.
Yeah, that's basically a Black Widow movie.
Right. Yeah.
That's an R-rated Black Widow movie.
Yeah, right. and speaking of that, you mentioned the all female part. One of the other good cheers it got was when Scarlet Witch is ripping off Thanos' armor.
She got a good cheer. She had one of the best lines. It was such a simple line.
I don't even know who you are.
You will. It was such a badass line. The way she delivers it, it's just like all that rage in it.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you will. And she just goes to town on him. And
going off her, do you think that the show that they're doing on Disney Plus could be the way they slowly introduce the X-Men into the MCU?
Well, they explain that she's not a mutant, right? Because she's a miracle.
Yeah.
You could have, but
you could
obviously
retcon that very easily.
You could, there's also
they could just confuse her for a mutant, and that's
true.
How like she pops up on Professor X's radar.
What you could do is, you know, there's this whole story arc called the House of M, where her reality bending powers come into play, and they haven't explored that yet. So in that story arc, she wishes pretty much all mutants to not exist. So she creates her own reality, her own alternate dimension where there's no mutants. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if you wanted to bring the X-Men in, you could have her, or I think the easiest way would probably be to use Doctor Strange's powers into the multiverse. But if you wanted to explore Wanda's powers, you could do it that way, where she can create an alternate reality or bring someone from an alternate reality in. She's a very powerful character.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Who do you think is going to pick up the torch for Iron Man? Is it the kid from Iron Man 3? That'd be weird, right?
I hope not. I didn't know who that was at first. I was like, who?
Yeah. Oh, I was like, who's that random ass kid?
Right. Like, we're supposed to know who you are, motherfucker. Come on. We have all these prominent characters, and all of a sudden this lanky kid is there.
Yeah.
Like, what is going on here? I think the easiest would probably be Peter, right?
You think? I'm talking about in terms of, like, is there going to be a new Iron, like, in an Iron Man suit?
Like Riri Williams?
Sort of, yeah. Because that was the lone kind of bonus thing at the end of the movie was the sound effect.
Yeah, the cling, cling. Right.
So if you do Riri Williams, then you have a way that you can bring back Robert Downey Jr. in a voiceover
in
role.
The AI. Yeah. Yeah, that's what I was saying. I would like to. You can see Marvel is really going more that way, mm-hmm. right? Because you have Black Panther, who is going to be prominent. You have a Black Captain America now. You have Captain Marvel. You have the Wasp. So they're going more towards minority and female driven characters.
Sure.
So it's very possible in the future that we can see a Riri Williams and a Kamala Khan as Ms. Marvel. And I think even Brie Larson has expressed interest in saying, like, yeah, bring Kamala into the fold. Because I don't know how many movies she signed on for. I think from what I read, Boseman and Cumberbatch only have two more movies on their contract.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, who knows? that's the beauty of these characters. Like, a lot of people don't know that Riri Williams becomes Iron Man, but the name Iron Man now is so, it carries such a weight to it. It's a heavy hitter. Sure. You could do that, and you know, people would probably, I know I'd go see it. And I think they've earned the trust of the general audience to at least give that stuff a try.
And I guess it's not really even that sacred at this point in terms of the Iron Man suit, because everybody's worn an Iron Man suit at some point. And she's technically Iron Heart in the comics. She's not Iron Man or Iron Woman.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily having to take on that official mantle of Iron Man.
Right. It's cool because, you know, Aquaman, Black Panther, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, that we're seeing that minority characters can kill it. You know, they can generate huge box office revenue. So now you're going to see more, you know, executives saying, like, green lighting these kind of moves, which is only for the better. You know, it's because these characters have such, not so much Riri Williams, who's been around very briefly, but a lot of these characters have a rich history. So you, like, Miles Morales has been around for probably close to a decade now. Kamala Khan's been around for a few years, so you can bring these people in. But I mean, I don't know if we're digressing too much from Endgame, but I think the future is bright, but at the same time I'm nervous.
Mm-hmm.
Because how can you top these 22 this saga? So they kind of have to start over from scratch.
I think that is one, that's their problem to solve, not ours. I think I always kind of treat each specific, like, I treat the Avengers movies different than I treat the one-offs, the solos. Mm-hmm. You know, I treat those, the Avengers movies and like Captain and Civil War, as like those are the big moments. Those are the crossover issues. Those are the event issues,
right?
Essentially. And then, you know, all the other movies are the story arcs in between those event moments. I go in with different expectations for each one. You know, Captain Marvel, I was like, you know what, I'm not expecting to be blown away like I will be expecting Endgame in a couple of months. And I wound up enjoying Captain Marvel.
Yeah,
I think
yeah.
you kind of have to manage your own expectations with that. But we'll see in 10 years if they are able to come up with a new close to this saga. The next few couple of phases.
And speaking on Captain Marvel, I don't know. We haven't done much on a podcast talking about it, but I heard somebody say that. The main issue with that, and I don't know if they just felt they had to rush it because of Endgame, was that they basically meshed two Captain Marvel movies into one. Like, you could have done the origin of her as just a badass fighter pilot and, like, slowly built up, Carol Danvers,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then, you know, had the big reveal be at the end, and then the second movie be about, you know, the Kree and all that stuff. But, you know, that it felt like the Captain Marvel felt like the back half of the first Captain Marvel movie and, you know, the front half of the second Captain Marvel movie, you know, in the way they told it, because maybe they felt they had to fully form the character because of Endgame.
Sure.
Coming out that they didn't have the time to do it. But
I think they just, to me, it just seemed like a perfectly fine origin movie.
Yeah.
You know, I think they did have a lot on their plate to, because they wanted her to be the next to really, I think she's supposed to lead after a certain point. So they want to show that she has leadership material and she's the most powerful. And I'm really happy that they didn't overuse her in Endgame. She's at the beginning. She's in a little meeting with Natasha and the rest of the group. And then you don't see her until the end. She just had her own movie, so there's no reason to keep her around for a half hour, 40 minutes. It was cool when the Thanos' ship instinctively fires at her, knowing that, like, something more powerful is in the vicinity. I thought that was cool, and it was a good scent. It was just a good way to include her without overdoing it.
Yeah, yeah, and also going back to the whole, they never do anything by accident. You know, her whole line and mantra throughout this movie is that, you know, yeah, sure, everything is happening here, but there's also like 10,000 other planets that things are going on. So that leads to the next phase is probably going to be in space. You know,
you might see the Nova Corps.
You know, dealing with that problem there more than Earth. This was the end of like the Earth saga.
Possibly.
You know,
right?
And now everything will be universe wise. But yeah, man. Yeah. I gotta say and every time he comes up on screen, he makes more and more of a perfect choice of Tom Holland as Peter Parker. Just when he sees Captain Marvel for the first time, he goes, "Hi, I am Peter."
It's just like terrified beyond him. Like he's getting bombarded, and then all of a sudden, this woman just shows up. Like, "Hi, I'm Peter Parker."
He's in my opinion, he's the first one to capture what I always imagined Peter Parker at that age being.
He looks like a teenager. He's the only one who really did look like a teenager.
You know,
it's a shame he's still technically property of Sony.
I know.
This phase would probably be his to lead if it wasn't that way.
Probably. So to me, I think they're going to lean heavily on Black Panther and Captain Marvel. And Strange. But again, I don't know. None of us know, but I'm. I don't know. One thing, and then I want to get into my final, maybe not my final thought, but just like my overarching feeling. Did either of your hearts sink? You know, there's that moment where, you know, Thanos has all the stones finally, and Tony looks over at Strange, and Strange just lifts up the finger. Did anyone's like heart sink? Because mine did.
Why did it sink?
Because you know what's going to happen. You know that Tony's getting ready to make the sacrifice. Because going in, I knew it was one of them. It was either going to be Cap or Tony. So I was kind of hoping.
I told you it was Tony's kill. I called it.
Yeah, you did. You did. And, you know, I really wanted it to be Cap because I can't imagine this going forward without Downey. But it you're right. It makes so much more sense that he gets it. It started with him. It ends with him.
Yep.
So yeah, when Strange lifts up the finger, and you just know, like, oh shit.
Yeah.
Tony's going in.
There's that great scene where he first sees Strange again. Yep. And he's like, "You told me you saw all these visions, and there was one outcome where we win. Is this the outcome?" He's like, "If I told you that, it wouldn't happen.
It wouldn't happen because he knows he would try to think of a way." Yeah. To not die, obviously.
Yeah.
And they would lose. So, yeah, it's, again, it's the perfect ending. They don't over-dramatize it where it's, you know, he gets the stones and you know, Thanos is being, he's gloating again, like, "I am inevitable." And Tony just, "And I'm Iron Man." And bam, it's like it's such a great Tony Stark response.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, just like, "Fuck you." And, even his death scene it's not this drawn out, everyone gets to say goodbye kind of thing. It's just, you know, it's
two most important people.
Right. It's Peter and Pepper. So it's.
And she tells him what he told his dad in the past. It's going to be okay.
We'll be fine.
That's right. Yeah. We're going to be fine. We're going to be okay. You could rest. And. Ugh, it's when Peter is saying goodbye to, like, not saying goodbye, but like, "Oh, we did it, Mr. Stark, we won." Like, I got a little choked up there. Yeah. I was like, "Oh God, this kid just knows how to pull at the heartstrings too." Like, "I don't feel so good, Mr. Stark. I don't want to go. I don't want to go." God, it is such a great moment. And again, it's not, you know, Cap saying goodbye, Thor saying goodbye, everyone lining up and, you know, paying respect kind of thing, but.
They have that moment at his funeral.
Yeah, and it was a good send-off. You have the original arc reactor being sent out, and it's very touching. So everything in this movie was done. I want to say everything wrapped up perfectly. They didn't leave anything untouched. They didn't do anything that they shouldn't have done. Like, they didn't do more than should have been done, I should say. So everything was just right.
Yeah, and they really only did one thing in this entire movie that broke any of their rules, and that was Cap at the end.
Yeah.
You know.
It wouldn't make sense if you think about it. But
yeah, they went with sentimentality over, mm-hmm. you know, the rule they established, which is the right choice. It's absolutely the right choice.
Yeah.
But they waited till the very end of the movie to break the rule they have. Like, I'm assuming we're meant to, unless if I miss something, because, you know, the emotions at that point are pretty overwhelming. Are we supposed to think that old Cap just knew where to go at that point in time on that exact date and, you know, to sit on that bench? Or did he travel?
Yeah, I mean,
yeah. Or did he do another time travel from whatever, reality he was?
Oh, yeah. He'd probably just time traveled to that time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cause, did it when everybody was in the back of the house.
Yeah, he knew, I would assume.
Yeah.
Yeah. And because that opens up, the thing where, him living out his life with, Peggy is, sort of, it throws a monkey wrench into it because, there's so many things that happen in the timeline that we're supposed to be on. You know, again, once you think deeply into time travel movies, everything breaks down. But,
here's the one thing. If they've already introduced alternate timelines in this movie, right?
Yeah.
So him going back to another timeline is not really much of a plot hole.
So he could live
in another timeline and, and then jump to ours for that final scene.
So you're saying it's not the timeline that we've already witnessed?
He doesn't go back and live with Peggy in that timeline. In the timeline we see, he goes and does it with another. And the overlap isn't that long, if you think about it, right? Because he's frozen
for 70 years.
Yeah, between Captain America, the events of that until 2011, right? Yeah. 2011, yeah. 2012?
Yeah.
So Peggy dies in 2016.
Right-ish.
Yeah,
so
he dies in the first event.
He probably comes back after that.
Yeah.
And he'll be an old man when young Cap comes out of ice. So it's completely plausible that their lives wouldn't intersect.
We can't become time travel experts. That's the thing. We can only guess.
No.
I think that everybody that's been acting like a time travel expert this past couple days are idiots.
Of course. Everyone decides what can and cannot be done. Just have fun with it. Time travel is impossible.
Yeah.
That's why these guys can make their own rules however they see fit.
Yeah.
Because it's made up.
And they do a good job of saying that while doing it.
Mm-hmm.
The whole Banner stuff, and then Tony
says it's either all a joke or none of it is.
Yeah, and that's the best way to sum it up. It's time travel. It's either all of it a joke or none. Yeah, it's perfect.
You can't comment on time travel in this movie unless you've watched Time Cop and have had a conversation about what would happen if you double team your wife.
With your past self,
which would work in this movie because you wouldn't have to worry about the
back to the 1940s, find himself before he freezes,
kills himself,
and then just double team Peggy Carter.
Then kills himself.
Yeah.
Oh boy, God, that would be one patriotic three-way.
Just wrapped in American flag.
That'd be two America's asses
That's a great line too. That is America's ass.
And then little tiny Ant-Man salutes, which is great.
I love that whole scene. I could do this all day. Yeah, I know. it's such a good callback.
I also love that they were able to squeeze in the Hail Hydra, referencing the comic book.
Yeah, the Captain Hydra.
Yeah,
that
was
great.
Cool. Yeah, there's some cool Easter eggs in here.
Yeah, I think in terms of the whole why I was, okay with the time travel in this is that just the way Banner reacted when he had to do stuff with it, and he's like hitting the things. He's like, do you think this will work? I don't know. How's it going over there? We're good.
We don't want to lose you in 1950. That's not gonna happen. I have no idea.
Yeah.
But it's cool because you know he's a genius, but it doesn't mean you're a genius at everything.
Yeah.
So I mean Tony Stark is a genius at everything, but that's different. Anyway, I just shot down my.
Yeah. So I guess we'll start wrapping it up. Before we start getting into our final ratings and everything like that, what character going forward that maybe hasn't been announced yet would you want to see, you know, come into a new movie?
I want to pick someone who is grounded, but at the same time would be plausible for an Avengers type movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because like Moon Knight, but Moon Knight's not, he's not that level of character. He's more of like a Batman. Man, who would I want to see brought in? I mean, I guess you could say either X-Men or Fantastic Four, but I'm gonna go with a villain.
Okay.
I want to see Doctor Doom brought in because he's one of the most powerful. Like, he rivals Thanos in a lot of ways.
Do you think that's the answer to how this can be topped?
That's a good start, I think. You have a man who is, he's almost a god at some points in the comic books.
Wasn't he in Secret Wars, the most recent one?
He was, yeah. And he's like god, I think he's god doom at that point.
Yeah.
So, I mean, come on, this man, he's magical and he's godlike. So If you're going to put the new Avengers up against someone, I think he would be the best one to go against.
Yeah. And I was going to make pretty much the same point because we've been talking all the time about that of who hasn't been introduced and would fit into the phase being all about space. It would be, you know, Doom and the Fantastic Four.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, running into them more than X-Men.
Yeah. Like Galactus or the Silver Surfer.
Yeah, there's so much from that world that you'd run into in space, and then you can always, you know, if you need to introduce the X-Men at any point, you can do it in the individual movies, like just slowly but surely. Maybe they start running into a few of them, or there's references to, like in the Scarlet Witch show, references to, oh, there's this place where a lot of people like you are, or, you know, something like that, you know, and just...
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to just have them just plop in like everybody shows up in at the end of Endgame and they just walk off a jet and it's like, oh, there are the X-Men.
I was thinking a cool way to introduce Wolverine would be a flashback to like the Hulk versus Wolverine. You know, when Banner is just trying to get away from civilization. Like, yeah, I ran into this one guy and we had a dust up and there's a flashback of Wolverine going up against the Hulk. So you do a huge fan service there. Because everyone wants to see that. And then you also kind of introduce, well, Wolverine is now in the MCU.
Yeah. Yeah, and you can always do the cool thing of an after credits scene where you just see this, you know, the claws come out.
The claws pop out, yeah.
You know, off screen and just pop on the screen and it flashes away.
Yep.
You know, it was like, you know, it's, you have a lot of moments where you can do that in terms of getting those guys involved and not knowing... You know, not knowing much of the deeper catalog of what's left, you know, in terms of villains or heroes or anything else that hasn't been introduced. They did introduce a whole lot of people over these 21, 22 movies.
Right.
You know, it's just and even some like C and D level Avengers.
There's so many.
They even got some of those in and then there's still plenty more.
You could pull She-Hulk. You could do Namor.
Yeah.
Ghost Rider. You bring Ghost Rider in. You know, there's a ton of characters.
Yeah. There's still a whole bunch, but you start, like, they chose these characters for a reason. You know, when they did the first, saga here. It was like the thing I was discussing with how the Avengers they chose for this movie shows why... The Avengers as a group is better as a storytelling purpose than Justice League is. Because,
so far.
You know, because all of these characters, especially the ones they chose for this, have some type of flaw or some type of story that that you can pull from to make them feel, you know, not just like, hey, you're strong, I'm strong, let's,
right,
you let's know, go evil. Do that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, there's real stakes with the Avengers,
yeah,
more than there is, you know, with, and that's why, you know, Justice League probably flopped more because it didn't establish any of the backstory of those characters to make it an interesting thing to come together. And I think that's why I trust, you know, Feige and the Russos in terms of, you know, being able to grab a character I've never heard of, and maybe you have from, you know, reading the comics, and just go, oh, that's a really awesome character.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why hasn't he gotten play? Because, you know, because Iron Man, as you said, wasn't, he's probably what, B,
yeah,
C tier, maybe, you know?
I'd say B, like Thor, you know? Captain America, they're all B, lower, you know? A. They weren't Spider-Man and the X-Men.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, there's some wells they can pull from there. And, you know, being in space, it gives you a lot of options. And, mm-hmm, you know, it just, the good thing they got to keep doing moving forward is to pick the actors that fit the role more than going for a name. They've done that, you know, like we were talking about, who would have hired Robert Downey Jr. in 2006? You know,
Chris Hemsworth. Hemsworth was a no one.
Yeah, and Chris Evans was the Human Torch in a terrible two Fantastic Four movies.
And Pratt was this overweight dummy on Parks and Rec.
You know, they found the people that fit what the type of story they were telling.
Yeah,
and didn't go for the big name. It's like, it's why I laugh at that. You know, if the Avengers was shot in the 90s. You know,
Tom Cruise.
Yeah, and I'm like, no, they wouldn't have chosen any of those people. I think the only one that fits
anyone else to choose from.
You know, like there were probably actors from back then that would be in the same category as these guys that you could pull.
Mm-hmm.
I think the only one that fits that feels like she would have been a Marvel character was Winona Ryder. You know,
maybe.
You know, in the sense that she was in, you know, some popular movies, but hadn't really had much success since, more like a Downey Jr., where he had, you know, his big success and fell off a little bit and then got brought into this and resurrected, you know.
Okay.
You know? But yeah. So I unless if Anthony has anybody else that, you know, he can think of in terms of this, I don't know, you know, anything,
nope,
you know, in terms of characters we could bring in.
You don't have anyone in?
I got nobody.
What? How are you going to ask us that question and not have an answer?
I would like to see Fantastic Four. Right. I'm sure they were Fox, right? So I'm sure, yep, Kevin Feige can't wait to figure out how he's going to do that. Your answer of Dr. Doom.
They're talking 5 years until they bring in X-Men and Fantastic Four.
Got to slow play it, man. You can't, you can't DC this shit.
No, well, because they already have their slate up until,
yeah,
you know, a certain time, and I guess it's just not in the books.
Can't DC this shit, man.
No,
it's got to come in naturally.
You got to earn it.
Speaking of which, I went down a rabbit hole of DC truthers. Ooh, boy, man.
They're so bitter.
They are so bitter and just delirious.
People saying that Justice League was better?
Oh, yeah. And just like, the Snyder's a real director. If only we got that Snyder cut.
Right. They will hang on to the Snyder cut till their dying day.
I did read something about, like, they said that Joss Whedon purposely sabotaged it.
For Marvel.
God,
yeah.
Man, you guys are fucking crazy.
Yep.
This is worse than QAnon.
The one I read today was, so let me get this straight. Thor decapitates Thanos out of anger, and that's okay, but Superman can't break Zod's neck and Batman can't kill bad guys. No, because those two have sworn not to kill. that's their whole character. Thor kills wantonly in the comic books. He doesn't have that moral code because, you know, Superman is, if I start killing, what's to stop me? I am basically God. I can kill anyone at that point. And Batman is the same thing. If I give in to that anger, I won't be able to come back from that darkness.
Yeah.
So that's why he doesn't kill. So
I also saw something where it was like, they were like, so Captain America could say to himself, Bucky's still alive.
Oh, Martha.
And then, but yeah, but they can't say Martha. Like, yeah, but it's context.
And it's earned. That's more earned. Yeah. Right. It's you had a whole movie set up for that. You can't just have Batman hell bent on killing Superman, and Superman just says a word and like, oh, now we're cool.
That just works solely because your mothers shared the same name.
Right. Yeah. This is your best friend. This is basically your only family left.
Yeah.
And like, oh, well, that's the same thing as Martha. Fuck out of here.
Yeah.
I feel like they're bots in really by DC. They're DC plants.
Yeah. The only thing I can imagine is that they are people that have for years held that Batman is such a cool character and Superman is over some of the Marvel people,
mm-hmm.
you know, and now, you know, they see the Marvel people actually, you know, having success with their vast library of superheroes and just can't give up that, you know, fanboy, you know, turf war sort of thing instead of enjoying everything.
Right,
you know,
because it only helps you out with with Marvel's success. DC is going to keep bringing more superheroes out because people will see Avengers made $1 billion in 3 days, so we need to do that.
Yeah, without Marvel and the stuff they did, do we get the Harley Quinn movie?
Probably not.
You know,
they pioneered. They didn't just pioneer superhero movies. They pioneered film for the for the foreseeable future. Everyone wants in on these shared universes.
Yeah, if it wasn't for Feige and all the stuff that's going on in the last 10 years, and this isn't just heaping the praise, but he changed the idea of the superhero movies from the Bruckheimer Batmans,
mm-hmm.
those early Spider-Mans, which were two of them were good. And you know, that stuff, the first Fantastic Four, those X-Men movies, and just turned it on like, no, it doesn't need to be like that. You can tell actual stories with these characters. You don't need to just try to make it, panel for panel, copies of the comics.
Right.
You can make actual movies, with these people. If you pick the right actors, the right, heroes to choose. You know, and not just keep throwing out the ones that everybody's known for 60 years.
Sure.
You know, if let's just say DC resets by doing the, Flash movie, like Iron Man, in like 5 years, and then starts building it up to Batman that way.
Right.
You know, instead of starting with Batman and building down to the B and C level characters.
Right.
You know, maybe the success Marvel has had will show DC that, no, the way you've been doing it is not... You know, the way to succeed, you don't bang the audience over the head with the same character.
Sure. All right, we're getting a little long in the tooth, so I'm going to wrap it up. All right, guys, ratings.
10.
Mark?
Yeah. Yeah, I've been, as you had joked earlier amongst us talking about it, I've been trying to find reasons to not give it a 10 because I'm very stingy about my 10s. But yeah, I haven't stopped thinking about this movie since I saw it Friday. And it's the first movie that I actively am attempting to go see a second time since Dark Knight. So, definitely a 10 on my end.
Yeah. I can't not give it a 10. Like, I could say 9.5, but
be a dick.
There's no reason why I can't, why I'm not giving this a 10. So,
yeah,
it's a 10.
Yeah.
It's everything I wanted it to be. It felt like an event comic. It was the perfect version of this movie that it could have possibly been.
Yeah.
Agreed. It delivered and gave me so much more.
All right, guys. Any last?
I was just going to say, I hope they continue to do it in the future.
Yep. Mark, any last word?
Yeah. You guys work. Not even plural. I get one word.
And you've used it. So.
Just going off Dan is that I hope they continue to do what has got them to this point successfully and not just, keep chasing the box office records in terms of money. Because sometimes you might not get a $200 million opening weekend, but that movie is just as important to the overall scheme of the thing to build to another movie to eclipse this in box office. Mm-hmm. You know, you just got to have the plan and stick to it. And
stay the course.
Yep. Yeah.
Well, luckily, the studio that owns them can just take hits left and right and never feel any sort of ramifications of not making a hit. So.
And soon they'll have Hulu, so...
it's gonna be that's gonna have all. So any pluggables, guys?
Follow us on the Twitter and on the Instagrams and all the social medias.
Yeah, the normal Stranger Damie stuff, you know. The episode that just posted is the end of our last session. Nice battle and some important information revealed to the players at this point comes up. That's pretty cool. So just be on the lookout for that. Yeah, nothing out of the ordinary.
Okay. Yeah, so you could find us. They called us a movie.podbean.com. And you can find us on any streaming app, iTunes, Stitcher, any kind of podcast streaming app that you get your podcast, we should pop up. Just search They Called Us a Movie. We are themaindamie.com. And you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at themaindamie. We post pretty regularly on those places. We are now part of Geek Vibes Nation, and you could find them on gvnation.com. I do know they just had their own spoiler cast. You can listen to their thoughts. They have a whole. They post a new episode of one of their shows just about every day, so it's a good stream to follow. Just look for Geek Vibes Nation on any podcast streaming app, and they should pop right up. We should be popping up on some episodes in the future. We've been super busy at work for some of us, and then some other things for other people. I don't know.
Yeah, me not being a Game of Thrones fan essentially left us out of that episode.
But we should be showing up on some of their shows in the near future. For now, I'm Ant Delvec on Twitter. You can find me there. Dan's DAquino122 still this week?
Yep. Right. Haven't given up on it yet.
Okay. and Mark is off the Mark tweet. And that's all the ways you can get it in contact with us. You could send us an email at themaindamie@gmail.com. But other than that, this has been our Avengers Endgame spoiler cast. And so we don't have to tell anybody to go fuck themselves. For Dan Aquino and Mark Myers, this is Anthony DelVecchio telling the Russo brothers, thank you.
We love you.
We love you. There we go. We love you 3,000.
Aww, oh, perfect.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.